Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning into the New Mainstream Podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and the co-founder of Think Now. Today, our guest is Charlie Echeverri, founder of Black Brown Collective. Charlie, we met when you were at Me Too. Now you have Black Brown Collective. Would love to introduce yourself to the listeners and hear more about how Black Brown Collective came about.
Hey, Mario, thank you for the invitation. I really appreciate it. And although I think it was somebody recently on my side that said it must feel more like black and blue than black and brown, given everything that we're going through right now. And look, like everybody else, you know, we're just chatting about this obviously a little bit ago, but you know, we're all in this together, which is, you know, the reality of it. And I think that in a way that's kind of comforting, because there's nothing that is irrelevant about changes in life and business that can't be talked about. So everything is automatically contextually relevant, right, for everyone, which I think is a really cool place to be, at least as it relates to, you know, things from a business standpoint that drive innovation and drive partnership and relationships, because everybody's in that kind of same position. And then the other aspect, which I think is kind of interesting as we begin this this little recording, is I think every touch point begins, as we did right at the top, with kind of how we're doing, right? How we're kind of holding up. How are things going? But it's a pleasure to be with you, and look forward to chatting and, you know, exchanging some information. Thank you for the invite.
Yeah, definitely. And, I know you started Black Brown Collective a couple months ago, but really you started your business during a pandemic now, essentially, right? When you look back on it, and we'll all get through this. I mean, what was the thinking behind Brown Collective? I mean,
yeah,
what was,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, you know, we've, you and I have connected originally at Me Too and then sort of reconnected here with Black Brown. But I've had Black Brown up for a couple of years now. So it's been about not quite 2 years, maybe, September of 2018 is when I put the shingle out and officially launched in November of that year. So it's been a little bit
of time.
But bottom line is, look, the thinking that led to this, and we're all kind of like shaped and formed by our own experience, right? So on some level, the businesses we get into are expressions of ourselves, unless we're, you know, maybe just looking at things like a portfolio and we're going to dabble in a bunch of different things. But I'm not built that way. So for me, it was, how can I take all the great lessons that I've learned, both in the kind of corporate media background with things like Walt Disney and Univision, as well as in the startup life, really helping to stand up a company like Me Too that was, you know, first in its class, really. And, you know, to my mind, now being 2 years removed from it, I can say that we built, from a B2C standpoint, probably the most significant consumer brand in the Hispanic space since Univision. I really do believe that.
And
so I think we've been, you know, shaped by that, or I've been shaped by that experience. And so when I thought about, okay, I'm on the other side of Me Too, and everybody will have, you know, a moment when they're no longer doing whatever it is that they're doing. So that moment came for me and a number of other folks when we kind of pivoted the company into more of a direct-to-consumer operation. And when I was on the other side of it, I said, okay, well, what have I picked up? What have I really learned? And how can I put this to use? And so very quickly for me, it was like, you know, I want to actually put out a shingle, put out my own initiative that's really focused at this very interesting intersection, at least the way that I saw it, was this intersection of things that are diverse, things that are emerging or digital, and things that are about youth. Like, that intersection of digital diversity and youth was very interesting to me, very focused. Certainly made it easy for me to talk to people about it, right? It's like, what are you doing? And I was like, well, you know, it's this kind of thing. So I initially set out with an idea that I was going to do strategic work, strategic advising, really, of companies, really focus at this intersection. And, you know, I tried to do it in my own way as legitimately as I could, meaning, you know, I launched a website, I did, business cards, I built a business model, I had a coming out party where we did this kind of big event in New York at IPG headquarters. I did a variety of different things to say to myself, hey, this is real. I'm not sort of just consulting in between, you know, gigs. because it did represent the first moment in my career where I became kind of self-employed, right? And where I started my own thing. So, you know, I did that and, you know, I got to work very quickly, mostly with startups. What the work that we do now has kind of run the gamut into what I would put into three different kind of use cases. The first one is really working with companies that are in that more startup realm that are, you know, that probably get the idea of things that are emerging and diverse consumers, but that they want to grow. They want to validate their business model. They want to connect with partners. They want to get bigger. On the other side of the spectrum, we also work with companies, or a use case, if you will, of companies that are more established but are trying to do internal disruption, are trying to do change management. They have a need to sort of develop new ways of thinking focused in the space of diversity and youth. And then in the middle, you know, we've been very fortunate to work with new brands, so companies that are effectively startups, but that are well capitalized, right? They're backed by larger initiatives. So for example, the XFL, the you know, new football league that launched just a few short months ago, and that, you know, sadly, like all sports, is in a state of hiatus right now. But, you know, that's backed by the folks at WWE and Vince McMahon and people like that have committed about $1.5 billion to it. So even though it's a new brand, they're not, it's not a startup in the traditional sense. So anyway, that's how, you know, I initially set out to do. And then we built the practice over the last, you know, couple of years into those sort of three use cases.
That's great. And I love that positioning. I mean, back to working with startups, there really isn't any companies out there that I know of that are focusing on youth and diversity as like a growth market, right? It's growth hacking. But really, like we're saying youth and diversity, but the youth is diverse, right? I mean, that's, they're like one and the same. I think that's super interesting. I mean, how do you find startups that are looking to multicultural youth that see that? Because I feel like, and maybe it's because of who we work with more established brands. So we're always kind of fighting the good fight and telling in terms of importance. Do you find that startups are more receptive to this idea of reaching youth with, you know, culturally appropriate messaging? Or, I mean, how has it been for you working with startups from that perspective?
I think in the startup case, it really is, to your point, less about a discrete identification with these audiences as kind of diverse and more about the consumer as a certain segment or of like, a, you know, a young consumer. And so it's initially about, hey, we want to communicate our value proposition. Here's who our target consumer is. And looking at that target consumer, to your earlier point, if they're under a certain age, they're automatically in that diverse cohort. And then it becomes more about, okay, how can we better understand who these folks are? And how can we build our companies on the basis of that understanding? I'll give you two quick examples. One of my favorite companies, which I, to be perfectly honest with you, before I was, I got outreach from them, from their previous CMO, I hadn't heard of them, okay? They're a company out of Nashville, Tennessee that's called Go Noodle, okay? And Go Noodle is basically a platform that develops content that it pipes in and makes available to educators in a school setting. So they are in 4 out of 5 public schools in the country right now. They reach 14 plus million kids right now. And they develop content that's all about mindfulness and motion. And they had a very successful company in and of their own right. But when I connected with them, with their CMO and CEO, it became really clear to them, the reason that they outreached to me was our constituencies are evolving, right? So when they set up the company and they were talking about moms, basically parents, kids, and teachers, those were their core constituencies. And the more that they looked at that core constituency, they were like, wait a minute, this core constituency continues to evolve and becoming more and more, in their case, Latinx, like every day. And they're like, what are we leaving on the table? So the thing that I thought was really admirable about that experience is here you've got this young company that's built a really great business, but they're looking at their consumers and going, you know what, even though I'm being successful, there's opportunity I may be leaving on the table. Let me go talk to an expert and see if that's true, because I see my consumer evolving and I want to take a step, you know, in that direction. Their CEO is a guy named Casey Estenson, who's a super great guy. And he had the foresight to go, this may be an area that I want to invest in or at least explore. That's the kind of thing that my hope is many more CEOs can think about. So it's not about like necessarily going, hey, I want to, you know, build my Latino or diverse thing. It's about understanding the consumer and going, the consumer's evolving. Maybe there's a different way to approach the work that we're already doing in order to make our work more relevant for that particular consumer. And it's not just about marketing. So anyway, that's just an example.
Now, I love that because you're coming at it from a marketing. I mean, it's totally doable. Obviously, that's what we do. And that's what you've done throughout your career. But helping them in those initial stages think about that consumer as a core consumer is so much easier than just looking at it from a marketing perspective, right? So that's pretty amazing.
And Mario, it's not, to my mind, it's not, it is easier. You're absolutely right to look at it from a marketing perspective, but I feel that that is one of maybe a few of these kind of, bad habits, frankly, that our entire industry has kind of maybe gotten into, or in some cases enabled. And what I mean by that is that one of the big insights that I've come to over the work in these last couple of years is that most of our industry has been set up at the very bottom of a value chain funnel. It's been, and I'm not even talking just about media, I'm talking about a number of industries, right? It's been about the Latino market is important, or the diverse consumer is important, all true, all right. Look at all these incredible metrics, amazing. Let's figure out how we can adapt, how we can target, how we can reconstitute, how we can translate, how we can do all of these things that are good to do. I'm not saying they're bad to do, but they're all down at the end of the transactional kind of funnel. They're basically, after you've taken care of the things that are truly important, you kind of focus on those. And so to me, it was, how do I go way up that value chain and start at the idea of product, at the idea, at the level of insight, at the level of story? Like if you start at that point, then it becomes less important how you translate, reconstitute, target. All of those things are additive, but they're not like essential, right? And so where I'm trying to focus the work of Black Brown is at the top of that funnel to help CEOs understand, hey, this consumer is important. What does that mean for your product? What does that mean for your story? What does that mean for your strategy? How are you using that at the very top? And then flowing that out, in many cases, through the existing channels that you have, not like creating new ones, right? And the last thing I'd say about that is that it really helped me, at least in my head, understand two things at the same time that were baffling me before, which was, if this audience is so important and this consumer is so important and all so important, and I agree, how come a lot of these businesses that are focused in this area tend to struggle? Even things like Univision, right? But compared to its peers, like it's not that hot of a media commodity. It really isn't, right? And so how do you rationalize those two? And when I thought about this kind of idea of where the value chain is positioned, it kind of began to make more sense to me that even Univision itself is kind of down at the end of the funnel, right? It's like, hey, we've got this audience and you can reach them in this language and we've developed this programming for it. All of that is good, but it's way down here. And I think that this idea at least helped me understand how it was possible that Univision could at the same time not do as well as perhaps it should, and the audience is gaining in importance, not diminishing in importance. It's where do we shift that focus in the value chain, and that's what I'm trying to do.
That's super interesting, and this may be a tangent, but it made me think of other media companies that I feel like we're trying to do what you're saying, be more organic, like Fusion, that wasn't very successful, right? I mean, what do you think happened there? This is totally random off the top of my head, but I mean, are there any learnings there that what they did wrong, some missteps?
Well, look, I think Fusion from the inception, Fusion may have been the victim of a number of different things that had nothing to do with the actual product itself. Okay. And you know, you're not, at least I think I'm not violating any trade secrets by sharing some of this stuff, because their laundry has been aired out pretty, you know, pretty publicly, and a lot of that laundry has not been super clean, right? So a lot of folks know about some of the inter-office challenges, political challenges, et cetera, that were tied into the creation of that idea, right? So the idea at the outset, and I was, you know, there when it was part of Univision when it was first being, you know, thought up, was a pretty solid idea that, you know, this audience is the sort of overlap between youth and diversity is getting stronger. And there's an opportunity to create something that actually addresses the needs of this cohort in a very different way. And that, you know, that there really isn't anything like that out in the market from a content standpoint. I think all of those things were like big thumbs up. Like, yeah, you're right. But then the actual delivery mechanism of that content, at least principally, was going to be a cable network, which made like no sense, right? When you looked at it again from a consumer standpoint and said, well, most of these audiences that are younger and diverse really are at least at the beginning stages and if not entirely focused on mobile platforms and digital ones and, you know, what do we have going on in, you know, other kind of emerging spaces. And so I think that it was a good idea that ultimately, like all good ideas, perhaps is poorly executed, but it was trying to retrofit a good idea into an older legacy model because that's just the way it was. It was almost like you have a great idea for, you know, I don't know. You have a great idea for a new piece of apparel, but you own a shoe factory. So you're going to turn that apparel into a new shoe when really it should be a new shirt. Right. So it was, right. It's that kind of a thing. And I think that's really what happened, at least from my vantage point.
Interesting. Dan, kind of pivoting to what's happening now, we're what week, is this week three of quarantine?
Yeah, I have no idea, but I'm actually, you know what, I screwed up because I was going to be doing like at least a picture, if not video documentary of my beard throughout this entire time. So I've been growing out a beard this entire time and I can tell by the length it's definitely a month. So it's, that's where I'm at.
I was trying to go for that. I was trying to go for that. And then I couldn't, my beard's not, I don't have a good beard. It's all patchy. So I went full shaved and then, so I just completely lost track of time from a beard perspective.
By the way, on that, just another example of like kind of seeing these dominoes fall, right? There's actually been an explosion in beard care, beard related tutorial stuff, like, you know, all the bombs and different things and whatever, because a lot of guys are sitting there going like, yeah, I'm not going to shave for whatever period of time this is, right? So it's just amazing to me that you're in these moments and you see these little things that begin to happen and you can kind of start, you know, thinking like a futurist and go, okay, if that's true, what does that mean? What are the implications of that? How can I take advantage of that? So it is a fascinating time, despite the fact I'm not trying to minimize that it's freaky and scary and all that stuff.
No, I think by the nature of the businesses we're in and being entrepreneurs, you look at that, right? And then me coming from a consumer behavior background, you know, and I have small kids. I have a 6-year-old daughter, a 4-year-old son. I'm like, what's the long-term impact on them? I saw a funny tweet. It's like, they're going to be Generation Zoom, right? Like,
nice. Yeah,
it's like, like literally my daughter is having play dates with her friends via Zoom and they're coloring. And she didn't miss a step. They're having conversations. Like if my wife and I weren't around, like, It's super interesting how people and then kids are just rapidly adapting to these times.
But think about it from even that perspective, Mario, right? And I'm sure that the good people at Zoom, who I don't know, but I'm sure that they're thinking about something like this, right? You've got this amazing branding component, which right now is manifested by millions of kids at home using your platform, perhaps for the first time ever. So you have this at the lowest level, like the lowest hanging fruit is like, wow, I'm branding a whole future set of future consumers. What does that mean? And how do I adapt to that? Secondarily, what evolution can I make in my product in order to better fit the needs of these kid consumers? Which, by the way, many of them statistically are going to be Latino consumers, right? They're Latino kids. It's like the LAUSD and New York, the LAUSD and New York school systems are the number one and number two school systems in the country. And 75% of those students are Latino. So what evolution can I make in my product, you know, that can provide value right now? And then, you know, like following that down the chain is the kind of exercises that, you know, companies of all shapes and sizes, you know, should be doing, certainly. And like, as it relates to diverse consumers, that's the kind of stuff that I love to help folks better understand. But yeah, Generation Zoom, that's great.
I mean, so we're in the middle of this. We've made some changes. I mean, off the bat with our, you know, we have clients, for example, that had focus groups going on. Those are done. So we're transferring those online. I mean, what are some things that you've done or that you're doing, thinking about doing, launching to kind of address this new reality that we're in? Because right now we're in quarantine. This is going to be, well, knock on wood, short-lived, but life's going to be different, right? Like business is going to be different. We were talking about some of the big kind of macro changes that are going to happen. How do you see Black Brown Collective helping clients understand consumers post pandemic? I like what you're already thinking about Zoom and addressing diverse consumers. I mean, what are some of the things that you're doing off the bat to help consumers?
Yeah, for sure. Look, I think, and I just recently published an article that kind of touched on a little bit of this. I think for anybody in a business relationship of any kind right now, look, we have clients just like you have clients, and people who listen to this, I'm sure, have clients or other stakeholders and constituents. And every one of us has those clients because there is a value relationship that exists, right? And the way that formula works is, you know, successful relationships are based on when the constituents believe that the value exceeds or meets the cost. That's like the formula. And right now, when the way that we work and when the way that we communicate that value has changed, you have basically two options. Option one is wait until things return to normal. That is not, in my opinion, the right step to take, unless you're in one of these, industries that is, you know, perhaps in this kind of boom, and you're really just trying to deal with demand and show that you're not gouging people or whatever, right? Think of grocery stores. Like, those guys are just trying to keep up and triage and deal with demand. But for the most part, we're not in situations like that. So we have to take our value and try to figure out a way, how do we continue to show or exceed the cost of that relationship with value, even if that value looks different from what we initially thought that it would, right? So over the course of this last month, for sure, with my clients, my conversations have taken on all kinds of different, you know, realms where our work product may have been interrupted. Our project scope may have been changed. I've had clients like, I mentioned one, the XFL. The entire sports universe has come to a standstill, right? So the projects that they were working on, let alone the things that we were working on, have also, needed to be reshaped. And that's exactly what's happened. So it's been a question of me, at least with this, you know, existing client base, making sure that we're trying to the best of our ability to reshape the value, or the offering rather, to drive the same amount of value, even if it takes on a completely different form. And that requires creativity, it requires communication, and it requires conversation, which is, you know, my sort of related advice to the people who are maybe working at, you know, larger companies that work with smaller companies like mine. It's important for them to take that moment rather than to hastily come to decisions to pause or cancel things, to actually try to work with their partners to reshape and reconstitute that value. So part of it has been really doing that, like making sure that we're delivering value to customers, even if the value is something very different than what we initially set out to do. In terms of new things, and again, kind of looking out at this, at the sort of, you know, the dominoes as they kind of begin to fall, I recently announced a strategic partnership with a company called Deodate. And they are a real estate, player. They're a real estate consultancy and advisory. Has been doing work for a number of years in the real estate community. And the real estate world, both this is commercial and retail, has already been dealing with a tremendous amount, you know, of flux, now only accelerated by everything going on with COVID-19. And so the innovation there, or the partnership, is one where we are bringing together the very best of real estate and retail thinking with the very best of diversity economics and trying to offer these real estate investment trusts and retailers themselves the kind of plan and roadmap they're going to need now more than ever to kind of program and grow their businesses. So that's an example of how, you know, we've leaned into some of these areas, and in particular, given what's going on with, you know, with this pandemic.
Yeah. And your initial, I love that advice, by the way, and to the listeners, what made me reach out to Charlie was that article that he referenced, great blog post. If we want to find it, Charlie, is it, you published it on your LinkedIn, right?
I published it on LinkedIn. Yeah. On both the, you know, Black Brown as well as my own personal, and I can throw a link on blackbrown.us, which is my website, blackbrown.us. I'll just put a little link up there for that as well.
Yeah. I mean, obviously as a small business owner, you know, that resonated with me, but I think you made a really good point about companies, larger companies that are working with vendors like ourselves should reach out and just have that conversation, because we are positioned to be able to be creative and
Absolutely.
To be able to pivot, because companies are going to come out of this. They're going to want to get back. I mean, and some companies already are getting back to, you know, whatever this new normal is like. Mm-hmm. And small businesses are best positions to help them, right? We can listen, we can adapt. And so that's really great advice for small business owners that are listening.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, which is hopefully no surprise to those small business folks, owners and others who may be listening, is, you know, we're also kind of the white blood cells of this whole organism, right? So the more we, you know, are able to survive and thrive, the better off everyone is. And so I think that, you know, that's the other kind of benefit, is not just our flexibility and our creativity, which I 100% agree with you, especially at these times. It's like, yeah, we can definitely bring a lot to the table, but also the fact that there's a long-term effect of you know, too hastily running to a cost cut reduction model that would have an impact on everybody, and frankly is having an impact on everybody, right? I mean, look at the sort of unemployment statistics that have been filed. I mean, there's going to be a big, you know, as I kind of like to say, the sort of back end of the slinky, that old toy, right? The slinky, kind of the front part you feel right now, and then the next thing comes whipping up like a few months later. There's definitely going to be a back part of this that can be in some ways mitigated if we turn to that small business community as a solve for a lot of these issues, even if it means re-expressing the value, right? And I think that's maybe hard for folks to understand. That's like, hey, I bought, you know, these five widgets, but maybe that company that you bought the five widgets from that they can no longer deliver can now give you, you know, advice on another area of your business that has nothing to do with the widgets you bought. And that's where the conversation becomes important to have.
Agreed. And I think that's a great, great quote to end our conversation. Thanks again for joining us, Charlie. If people want to find you on social media, can you drop your handles, let people know where we can follow you?
Yeah,
follow
absolutely.
The company?
So LinkedIn is at Black Brown Collective. Same on Twitter. And the website again is blackbrown.us.
All right. Thanks again, Charlie. And looking forward to meeting in person once this is all over.
Absolutely. And congrats to you, Mario, as well, on all the great work that you're doing. And it's good to be doing some work together as well.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Thanks again, Charlie.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform.